This little poem sums up an important attitude that is expressed in I Am the Vine. It says, "Ye seekers of the way, ye whose ears are yet deaf with the soundless to the soundless sound." Listen to that. Ye whose ears are yet deaf to the soundless sound. To you comes a message from all the spheres through which the spirit of life eternal presses onward, pulsating, rising, falling, beating the outward form into nothingness, that the immortal spirit of all things may be revealed to you. The soundless sound. Why hear ye not? The question arises, how do we put all this into our daily life? We don't. Spirit of God has already put it into the computer for us. Our function is to listen for the soundless sound, to hear the inner impartation, which comes not necessarily as a word, not even as a thought, but as an impulse, an impression, a feeling, something that moves you to take out of the computer and let it flow into your life. You don't actively stand behind your thoughts and direct them. Every truth is already in you now. You don't even select those truths. You let the Spirit of God move those truths through you as the Spirit moves. In short, you trust God to run the universe right through you. All you are learning is what your life is composed of, what your spirit is made of, so that you can say, well, I am this, I am that, I am the other thing. It will function. I have been asleep to Christ. Now I'm awake to Christ. There's that tendency of the human will to want to push all the buttons. And as I've been advised, patience is the word. Don't push the buttons. Let them be pushed by the Spirit. You'll find it much more less taxing on your nerves and much more productive if you wait upon the Lord. And that doesn't mean wait 50 years for something to happen. It means to be attentive, alert to that inner soundless sound. It's an attitude which you develop. It's almost instantaneous. It's just that momentary turning within which becomes a standard way of life. Before you rush out there, you check within. And then whatever you do out there will be ordained. You've got to develop that awareness that Christ within must go before you in all your ways. And then though you see not the Christ, you feel the living presence moving before you. Omniscience means that spirit lives itself automatically where you stand. The human ego has to submerge itself. And that takes a lot of trust, because we're so used to controlling the entire activity of our lives. We are dealing out there with images that are perishable. And the revelation of St. John continues the teaching of the Christ to bring us a preview of our own lives. And that preview includes the death of humanhood on earth. It includes the awakening to the spiritual nature of life without opposite. It includes the awakening to the spiritual nature of the vehicle in which you live. It includes the awareness that unless your life is lived by the grace of spirit, you're really not living divine life, and you're in a perishable, you're in a mortality that must end. John foresees the day when the earth perishes and is replaced. And he sees that day coming about through the cultivation of the soul faculties of man, in which these faculties push out images of another world from the soul. And the world before you is no more. The world of duality is no more. He sees the end of good and evil. He sees the transition of the human race. He sees the fourth world descending into oblivion and the fifth world emerging. And it is the Christ of John who brings forth this message. And it is the Christ of John who is the Christ of you, begging for that release, so that the transition you are in is brought into its culmination. I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day, says John, and heard behind me a great voice as of a trumpet, saying, what thou seest, write in a book and send it unto the seven churches. Those seven churches are the divine qualities in you, the gifts of God, the seven initiations through which you must go and are going through to attain transition. Those are the seven qualities in you that John developed to the full in making his transition, which Jesus developed to the full in making his transition. Each divine quality here is called a church. And these seven divine qualities in you are your seven churches. And when you bring these churches up to the fullness of their potential, you move to the fifth world, out of this fourth world. Perhaps you're not acquainted with the seven worlds. We have discussed them at quite some length in previous talks, but a review would not hurt. You have never left heaven. And this dream journey is to acquaint you with the fullness of your natural habitation. You are living in that seventh world, which is a combination of all the worlds that are. And as you made the dream descent down to the sixth world, and the fifth world, and the fourth world, you went all the way to the world of zero, of nothingness, to the void. That was the first half of your make-believe journey, which we each go through. We have to leave our heaven to find our way back in order to know what we have. We go into nothingness, and that nothingness is the dream. We start up from the void world, the zero world. We become outwardly the minerals of the earth. And the water running over the minerals brings us up to the vegetation that we now become. And we become animals, all in this dream world. And the dream isn't over until we become a higher type of animal and we stand upright. And this brings us into the fourth world, where we have this marvelous weapon called a brain. We almost imagine we are gods by that time, because we can do fantastic things until we die. And yet when we die and see others die, we are inevitably bound to question the nature of our life. How can it have a meaning if it ends in death? And we find we haven't yet come to life. We're just in a higher type of a dream. And although we cannot see clearly in that dream, and although we think we are running the show, it's no different than an ordinary dream. The things that are happening are simply running through our mind, and we believe they are external. We think because our eyes are open we can't be dreaming, but we're only dreaming that our eyes are open. We dream of these bodies, and we make all sizes and shapes of bodies. We animate them, we put hearts inside them. We do not realize that everything we are doing is a symbol our mind creates from the reality we cannot see. And then into our fourth world comes one who said, "You're asleep." And we say, "What are you talking about?" "Well, I'll prove you're asleep." "I'll do better than pinch you. I'll prove that everything you think you're seeing, you don't see at all." "Well, how are you going to do that?" "Well, I'm going to prove that you're blind. You think you have vision and you are blind. You think you're awake and you're asleep. So watch closely." When the Hebrews heard that kind of talk, they wanted to throw him out of the temple. And they tried. The Bible says, "And so he walked through them, and they could not touch him." What were we learning there? If you're not acquainted with incorporeality, how could you possibly imagine that he had vanished into his incorporeality? How could the people there believe he had done that? They just know that he must be over there and not over here. But he did it more than once. And nobody suspected what was happening. So he said, "Well, that was just a starter for teasers. We'll go deeper yet." See that boy in the coffin there? You think he's dead. "There is no death in my kingdom. This is my kingdom. I am walking in my kingdom. You call it your world. But what you see and what I see are two different things. You see in the dream. I see in reality. Now in your dream, he's dead. In my reality, he's alive. You think he's dead because you're looking inside yourself and thinking that you're seeing it out there. You don't know what you're seeing is within your mind. In other words, you're making an image within your mind. You haven't read your Bible, have you? You haven't read not to make graven images because you didn't know what was being said to you. You were being told that your whole life is made up of inner graven images, which you project into the illusion of an external world. There is no world out there." But he didn't quite say it that way because they were not ready to hear it that way. He simply went about his business of slowly doing things based upon that truth rather than explaining it. And here comes this funeral procession. A world in grief. The mother leading the procession. It says that she was a widow. What does it mean? "When you think not, the bridegroom cometh." Who is that bridegroom but the Christ? Why was she a widow? She didn't have that bridegroom. She was asleep to Christ. That's a widow. A widow is one who, by virtue of her unawareness of Christ, is separated from her husband. Her husband being God. And so she had lost the dearest thing to her, her son, because she was separated from God. She was a widow. And the world was supporting her belief, because there they were, carrying that coffin on their shoulders. And in it, the boy, dead in the dream. This is death, a procession of death, and over the hill on the other side comes a procession of life. Christ and the disciples. Life meets death. The dream meets the reality. He tells her not to weep. He tells the human race not to weep, because the human race is a widow. And they put the coffin down. It's one of those three-sided coffins. There's the boy, visible to all, dead in the dream. And his life in the form of Christ, looking at the dream of death. Every human being on the face of the earth is present right there, being taught that the human brain has no capacity to see what is in front of it. It sees forms that it manufactures in collaboration with the world mind. It externalizes these forms. It gives them dimension, density, shape. It animates them and it unanimates them. But it cannot create reality. And 5 minutes later, with no surgery, no medication, not even a pep talk, no laying on of hands, just seeing, knowing the inner truth that life is there as well as here. Where I, Christ, stand is life. Where the illusion of a dead boy lies is life, omnipresent life. And that realization awakens the boy. He wasn't buried yet. That would come later. They had to do it in stages to show you each phase of it. First the girl, not even dead, just in a coma. Then the boy, dead but not buried. The nobleman's son, about to die. And then Lazarus, buried in a tomb. All stages of the human dream, and not one of them true. Because every one of them springs to life with a Christ realization, teaching the human race what it was unwilling and unable to learn, that life is everywhere, that no one can die, there's no way to die, that life is God. And God is all. And death is a mental concept entertained by a mental concept called man. John foresees the end of this dream in the Revelation of St. John. And actually, the revelation is John coming out of the dream. John sees the end of the earth, not by a conflagration, not by an eruption, not by missiles, but by a change in consciousness. By man awakening to the inner Christ. And just as the inner Christ awakens the boy at Nain from the coffin, the inner Christ awakens a world asleep. Individual initiation becomes world initiation. I don't know, it's possible that one or two of us were in that funeral procession at Nain. And now we're in a larger procession. We're tackling a larger illusion than one person. We're seeing the illusion of all human life. And so we're not trying to improve human life. We're trying to awaken it. Because where human life stands is the invisible divine life waiting to be called forth out of the dream. This preview in the book of Revelation has not yet been released into human consciousness. The time has not been ripe for such a release. But I think you and I can feel rather blessed that we are at least semi-awake, at least coming into the consciousness of our own infinite reality. It's a big goal to take infinity and bring it into your life. It would be much easier if we just were thinking in terms of something less grandiose, less breathtaking than an infinite life. But the truth is that there is no other life available. All there is infinite life. It's so vast that we have to come at it through the seven churches, through the seven initiations. And you've been through, you're into your fourth one now. You're moving into your fifth. In your fifth initiation, living in soul, you will learn a great deal of how to be obedient to the Spirit that you cannot possibly know at this level, because mind has no capacity to be obedient to Spirit. But mind does have a capacity to release itself to the soul, which in turn can interpret the Spirit. And your soul is what is going to awaken the world and actually bring about the end of the world. Your soul will bring the world to its logical ending by awakening the world from its dream. None of this was known to mankind through the centuries. Only here and there was an occasional mystic able to say to his contemporaries, "You're going the wrong way." Nobody could hear him. Now, since Jesus took it out into the masses, it is slowly filtered into what is called the 20th century. And as we move into the 21st, we are finally coming to a place where what would be impossible for past generations is going to become our grammar school. The knowledge of being living spirit will be our grammar school. We will learn how to live as spirit, how to live with spirit, how to love spirit, how to share with spirit, how to cooperate with spirit, how to end all the dualities that are based upon spirit and matter. John foresaw the end of good and evil. He saw the end of material temptations. Man would see through the falsity of them, the nature of them as decoys, away from his true self. And once you're convinced that these are true directions and are ready to cooperate, to pull your oar, as it were, to make the ship go faster, you're going to find that these innate capacities that have always been within you will accelerate, and you will be quickened. You'll find that you have great potential unused. You will find that there is a new kind of energy available. It isn't physical. It isn't manual. It isn't a machine. Soul energy will outdistance anything known to man at this point. Soul energy will accomplish, without visible activity, what all of our machines are trying to do. Soul energy will run a ship. Soul energy will fly man through the sky. Soul energy will communicate so that our communication systems will be obsolete. And the reason soul energy will do all this is because your soul being infinite, you will discover that you are in instant communication anywhere in the spiritual universe. Perhaps you've had a glimmering of this. And if you do have a future glimmering, be assured it's only a glimmering, because the magic of soul energy is that no man controls it. No man pulls a switch. No man turns it on. No man turns it off. Soul energy is a quality of your being which releases the moment you find Christ within. You see it in the Bible but don't recognize it. You see Jesus on a mountain contemplating. He's all alone. And down below on the sea, the wind rustles a ship, becomes a tempest. His men are frightened. Jesus on the mountain becomes Jesus walking on the sea, instantly by soul energy. You don't think of it when you read it. And you won't think of it when it happens to you, because it will be normal. No one can bring soul energy into this world. It does not operate in this world. It only operates in the kingdom of heaven. But when you awaken to your reality, you are in the kingdom of heaven. And then what seems new to you at the time, the soul entity, is something that's been going on forever. You just awaken to the fact that it's there. So it is with your eternal life. No longer do you depend on a heartbeat. No longer do you depend upon the intake and outgo of air. There's no systole and diastole of breathing. The lungs don't play a role in your spiritual body. Your organs are not there to grow old. The valves can't clog up. There aren't any. Your body isn't made of parts. It's one seamless body. And it doesn't start over there and end over here. You can't find where your body begins or where it ends because it doesn't have form. You can travel throughout your body and still be traveling forever because it's infinite. And that kind of body can't be run except by soul energy. And so as you can see, the possibilities are so endless. Unfortunately, you won't remember this world anyway. You'll never know that you once ran on gas, that you once did something like breathed air in and out. If you could think back to those archaic days, you wouldn't believe it. Now, when you accept what it means to be the living Christ and try to understand that there is a you somewhere doing all this now, it becomes even more absurd. But in this fourth world, this fourth level, while we still have the fifth and sixth and seventh world to ascend to, we are slowly learning. It's as if we're unraveling the construction of reality to look at it. So we learn what it's composed of. And then when we learn our lessons and learn what we can and cannot do to move up and move into the fifth world, all previous worlds are forgotten. There's no need for them anymore. They have now become your consciousness. You don't need the minerals. You don't need the chemical elements. They have played their role. You don't need wind, fire, water, and air. They're not in heaven. Your first heaven is the soul realm. The fifth heaven. The fifth world, rather. And then you'll move on up from there after you learn how to let the soul be obedient to your spirit. You'll move up to the sixth world, the spirit world. And again, there'll be this acceleration, this lifting, this eliminating all that is unnecessary until you finally are born into the seventh world. And you find that every human birth is a copy, an imitation of that birth. Your birth into the seventh world, which is really a return to the seventh world, is being imitated by every child that's born in this universe. theoretically mother and dad produce this child. But it's really the union of soul and spirit in the higher worlds that is imitated in the dream world and becomes the birth of a child. That immaculate conception was shown to us briefly by the appearance of Christ Jesus. When we learned of his immaculate conception, we were being told that here was one who had attained the fullness of his Christhood. His soul and his spirit had produced the Christ child, which appeared on earth as other children. And he was in the seventh day, the seventh heaven. Actually, if you want to start from immortality on up, you would say the third heaven, soul, spirit, and Christ. In fact, the last day is often mentioned, and it always means the last day of mortality. And here, I think John said, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day. And he means the first day of immortality. Now on that seventh day, you have returned where you started. You had a grand tour so that you could learn everything that your life is composed of. You have to go through all of these infinite stages because it's so vast. And there you are now at the seventh day as the Christ. But you're right where you always were. You simply are more aware. In fact, you're infinitely aware. And it is this seventh day Christ which comes through as Jesus, which Pilate wants to kill. It is this seventh day Christ which finally makes the ultimate demonstration for this world that you can't kill me. How are you going to crucify in the fourth world something of a higher world? You're blind. You think you're making contact. You're not making contact. With your material sense of life, with your so-called human hands, you reach out to touch what is impossible to touch. Do you touch God? There's no contact. There's no contact with Christ. And so you hammer nails into a fictitious form in your mind and you say, I'm crucifying him. And you put the body in a tomb and you say, I'm putting the body in a tomb. And you seal it all up. And you put soldiers around it. There's nobody in the tomb. Even Lazarus wasn't in that body. And if we could understand at the time Jesus was demonstrating, the boy in the coffin was just an image. There was no self in that body. So when we see him sit up, we think, oh, he's raised the self in that body. No, he's done more than that. He is showing no death occurred in that body. There was no one there. No death has ever occurred. No death has ever occurred because the only life is the life of God, and everything else is concept. And all of this may cram the brain, and it may rebel and say, I can't do it all now. But we're given the ability to handle as much as Spirit feels we should. Whatever you feel you can't handle, you'll find you're given a new capacity to handle more by the Spirit. It sort of drops into your awareness as much as you can handle. Then it lifts you a little higher so you can handle a little more. Always Spirit is apportioning out to you what you are capable of assimilating. It's always to the maximum, but it's always what you can assimilate. And so we're learning. We're learning the unbelievable. And Spirit is helping us. And the revelation of St. John, which was 2,000 years in advance of our intelligence on this earth, was not really 2,000 years in advance. Because John was at a higher level then than we are now. John was in the seventh level. And to us it appears like 2,000 years ago. But to John, it wasn't. To John, the illusion of time did not exist. You find that all centuries vanish as you come into higher and higher levels of your being. You even find that life does not depend on the sun and the sky. So we come back to John, who knew all things and was left on earth in the dream that we could relate to him and that he could share with us the Christ vision. The divine nature of your being, who you actually are, is not something that is going to change. It will always be that way, and ultimately the non-reality of you will awaken so that you may accept your divine nature without opposite. It's a needless struggle that we go through because we can't quite accept it, and there are some who have less of a struggle because somehow they've been prepared to at least look at the dream and try to understand it. Usually it takes quite a buffeting around to be willing to look at the dream